Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Wendy Brookhouse. She is a certified financial planner, the founder and chief strategist of Black Star Wealth, and an author. Welcome, Wendy. I am so happy and excited to have you here. How are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful, Brad. Thank you for having me on your show.
It is my honor and my pleasure. You and I have been trying to get this done and bang this out for a while, so it's nice to finally connect and have you here for us to be able to do that. So with that being said, let's jump right in. I would love to know, what inspired your journey, first of all, into the world of finance and wealth?
Oh, it's such an interesting question. It's a bit of a long journey, but you made me think of, it was in grade 9, I think, I figured out that you could make money on the spread of the foreign exchange. And that was when I said, oh, I want to go in business. I'm going into business, no doubt about it. And so I did my undergrad in business, did a bunch of things, started doing some consulting. And I had done my undergrad was in finance and management. And so it took me until I was in my 30s before I started to actually tap into that and get into the business. And what was great about this business is you can make a serious dent in helping people. And it's an area where people are looking for help.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people need financial help. That's for sure. I don't think there will ever be a shortage of business for you.
No.
So what were you doing for a living before taking the leap or making the leap into entrepreneurship? And what was the catalyst for that shift for you?
Well, I was actually a vice president at an internet company. And I'm dating myself terribly here, Brad, but there was this crash back in the early 2000s where it all went away. All the tech world kind of imploded. And so I found myself kind of on the street looking for something to do. And already had a side hustle. The side hustle became a full-time gig. And that's how I ended up self-employed, almost kicking and screaming. It wasn't...
You were the second person in the last week that has said that they went into entrepreneurship kicking and screaming. It wasn't a real choice. It was just like, okay, this is what I got to do.
Well, and now you see, Brad, the interesting thing is I consider myself unemployable. Because I don't think I would do well in an employment situation.
You don't want someone telling you what to do.
That's right. What do you mean I have to ask for time off?
What do you mean? What do you mean I only get an hour for lunch? What the fuck are you talking about? I'll take as long as I want. And what do you mean I only get 2 weeks vacation a year? Fuck that.
What do you mean? I get a lunch?
So how did you come up with the name for your company? Oh. I love the name, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, if you are watching on video, you can see that I have red hair. And I had this name for my company and I absolutely hated it. It was boring. It was drab. It was yucky. And so I'm like, I need something punchy. And I'm like, well, I have red hair. I'm a star. I'm going to call it Red Star. And then I socialized that around all my very smart friends. And one person said, well, you know, red's the color of when you're in the hole, right? It's not a good place. Yeah. Another person said, well, you know, a red star is a sign of communism. So that might not be a good thing. And then my third super smart friend says, well, you know, red is the last color a star turns before it blows up. And I said, Black Star it is.
And in the black is a good thing.
That's right. So I went with that. I wanted something brandable, memorable, bigger than me. And so that's where that name came from.
Beautiful. I love the name. Can you tell us a little bit about Black Star Wealth and the services you offer?
Absolutely. Well, Great time to ask this question, Brad, because after 18 years in business, I think I finally have it nailed. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of packaging your services in a way that people can understand and make sense of. So I have on the financial planning side, I essentially 2 to 3 packages. And one is what we call the one number solution, which is my proprietary methodology, where we help distill your financial life down to one number. And so that allows you to cover debt repayments, your spending plan, your savings, any type of safety net or insurance that you need to get. We put that all in that one place. And the one number is the amount of money you have to spend every week on your discretionary lifestyle, like eating out and groceries, entertainment, all those things that may be more subject to emotional spending. The next level up is the Retire on Fire package, where we now actually start looking further ahead into retirement and starting to put a couple of levels of plan together. And so what we do is then take that one number solution base, and now we say, well, what will this number look like in retirement? What in your spending plan is going to go away? What's going to stay the same? And what's going to come in? And I think people forget that sometimes, you know, you're going to travel more. Maybe you're going to join a golf club. Maybe you're going to do that type of thing. So we have to add all those pieces. Maybe you're going to take up art and you're going to take art classes and need art supplies. So adding all those in. And then what I do is I go, what does that cost after tax to run that ideal life? And that's the number I then take into my software to actually start doing the planning and figuring out, okay, here's where your gaps are. Here's how much more you have to save. Here's how much more we have to action on to get you to that ideal life. And so it's numbers that are based in real numbers, if you will. It's not a rule of thumb, which in some cases are applicable, but I really hate it in my industry. Oh, you need X percent of your income, pre-retirement income. Really? Because sometimes I have actually had plans that took 110% based on what they wanted to do. I don't like rules of thumb. Maybe they might help along the way, but the more precise we are, actually the greater confidence that the client has that this is achievable. Because they actually, oh yeah, we accounted for that. Oh yeah, we did put that in. Oh, right. And so now they know that everything's been added up and kind of collected. So that confidence and like reduction of stress is a big part of that. I do a lot of work with entrepreneurs, and I have a couple of things I'm doing there right now. So I've introduced Business Value Amplifier. And what I did there and why I added it to my repertoire is when I'm working with business owners, a lot of times a very successful retirement plan may involve the sale of a business. Yet it's this big dark hole of nothing on our balance sheet because no one knows. And who wants to spend 15 grand to go find out what your business value is today when you may not actually need that number for a while in that respect? So I actually have a whole back end now that gives us the number. I have a 10-week program where we walk through, hey, how can you increase the value of your business? What are the action items you can take? That type of thing. And I've combined that with a really interesting financial plan from the entrepreneur perspective. So what we do there is we figure out what is their one number. We figure out what does their ideal life today cost. So that way we can then take a look over at their business and go, what does their business need to do to fund the ideal life? The other things we start looking at, and I think the pandemic really showed from a shockproof perspective, how much more we need to be taking a look at these numbers of if something happens and your world shuts down, whether that's a sickness or something that might happen or a pandemic, what kind of resources and access to capital or what have you, you may need. So I look at that as how much money do we need to have in cash? How much money do we need to have in available credit? And what kind of insurance products do we need to have to really help? I was thinking a really good friend of mine just had ovarian cancer and she has her own professional services firm. So her critical illness paycheck that she got for the claim kept her business alive. So these are really important things to look at. And then my big thing I try and figure out is what I call the power number. And the power number is that number, okay, how much do we need to have in the bank or in different assets and income producing things that, you know what, I have crossed the finish line. If I wanted to call it today, I have enough. And so I think then it becomes this, I know this is my line. And now anything past that is actually bonus. So when I think of the whole hustle grind, just keep going. If you know what the end goal is, you can decide if you want to keep going.
I think that hustle thing is bullshit anyways. It's garbage.
Well, here's my thought on it. I think there are cycles of it. I don't think we can escape hustle at all the time and at all costs. But I think what we have to start realizing is we're going to have cycles where it's a hustle time and now we let it go. It's a hustle time and we let it go. And I think 100% hustle all the time is just so bad on so many levels. But if we know, hey, if I hit this number, I can slow it down, it's great mentally.
So what is it that lights you up or excites you the most about the work that you do?
I think it's making the changes in people's lives and just seeing how by reducing the stress and anxiety they have around money, to know that they have a plan and they feel very comfortable with that plan and they know exactly what they have to do to achieve that plan, their world becomes a totally different place. You know, now all those balls in the air, I think of stress as and opportunities and all the different choices we have. Should I be saving more? Should I be doing this? Should I be, am I saving enough? That all these little messages in our head that are yelling at us all the time, we quiet them because we've actually taken that, you know, that ball down, examined it, found out what we wanted to do with it, put it in its place. Wow, that changes everything, right? Because now the energy that used to be taken up with, shut up, I don't want to listen to you, I'll get to you later, to your voices, they wake you up at like 3 a.m. in the morning going, you know. So if we can quiet those, just imagine how much positive energy we have to actually deploy into our business, into our careers, into our family, relationships, and community. It changes it.
That shift is huge for sure.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side of that coin, what is the most challenging parts of your business?
I think it's like any business owner. There's a couple things. I'll say building a business for anybody, it's different. Yet there are some core building blocks. And in terms of expansion, how to be ready, I know I had to deal with a lot of money mindset pieces for myself around selling and making sure that's a priority and all that type of stuff. But I think the thing that actually crushes me the most is if someone comes and they're in a position where I actually can't help. Do you know?
Yeah.
And so I have to almost put up the shields a little bit there, Brad. I want to be empathetic, but I don't want to take on the hurt because it's really hard sometimes to know, oh my gosh, I just wish I could help them. And you can point them in some directions, but you can't always do that.
Now, in your view, what does true wealth encompass beyond financial assets? And how do you guide clients to achieving a holistic sense of prosperity?
So a couple things there. I do talk about wealth is so many things. I think it is about relationships. I think it's about our health. I think it's about our money to some degree, because money at some level does fund a lot of the other things.
For sure.
I think about a brand new business owner that was in my office not too long ago, and we were having a conversation. I'm like, as you're building this, I want you to think about your life first. So let's think about that. How many days off do you want? What is the amount of time you're going to be able to work and still maintain your health? Are you factoring in a walk every day? What are you doing to maintain all these things? So even having that conversation at the front end, I think will add a great deal of value, because we get our nose down and we stop paying attention. And all of a sudden you're like, it's January.
It's January 31st.
And it's, did I mean to be here? Oh my gosh, where am I? And so being aware of those things. And I have a very wise thing to say about that. And that is, put it in your calendar.
There you go.
I feel like sometimes, man, we got to go back to basics on that stuff. So much about health and relationships work, it's on the side of our desk, just like some of our big projects are. And they never get totally dealt with unless we slot something in the calendar that says, I'm going to work on that now. I'm going to go to the gym now. I'm going to go for a walk then. You know what I mean? So I just talk about sometimes it's just all the basics of
time blocking. Yeah, for sure. Now, money, of course, is always a big conversation and a very personal matter for a lot of people. It's also often tied to emotions, behaviors. Mm-hmm. So how do you address the psychological aspects of money management, and what role does emotional intelligence play in financial planning?
Okay, I'll start with the last one first. I actually think emotional intelligence in your financial planner is way more important than IQ, because a lot of the stuff that requires complete IQ, let's say managing investments from a portfolio perspective, a lot of that can be automated or delegated to someone, right? But the emotional intelligence of being able to help people surface and deal with these issues that are actually the blocks to success are so, so very important. Now, I talk about this, but I sometimes reference, I have a couple, even though we're on Zoom, I'm like, there's six of us at the table right now, and you may not be aware of it. And that is you, me, and you, plus your parents. right? Because they have influenced us since we were quite little and we didn't even know. Mm-hmm. So I talk a bit about how I want to surface some of those programmings. So I have three questions I ask on my discovery calls, my first intake call, one of which is, what is your first memory of money? And we talk about that. Then we talk about, hey, can you tell me something your parents did with money that you never want to copy? And then we talk about something about your parents with money that you would really like to make sure is integrated.
Yeah.
And so we start to surface those things and we talk about how, are they still serving you or not? Like, and just surfacing is half the battle. And actually, as part of most of my programs, I do have a money success coach that comes in and really does help reposition things. But here's your plan that we're thinking will work. Now let's bring in the financial money success and let's make sure anything that's coming up from I can't do this or why I can't do this or whatever, so that we can grease the roads to make that happen.
Love it. Of course, mindset is a huge piece of this as well and can be a barrier to financial success, quite frankly. How do you help clients identify and overcome limiting beliefs or mindset blocks that may be hindering their wealth building journey?
So we could talk about that probably for 5 days, Brad, but it's again, surfacing and getting to be aware first of the pattern, because even if you're aware of the pattern, sometimes it can actually, you can start looking at things. And one of the tools I use as well is this very interesting risk tolerance questionnaire that is emotionally and behavioral finance based. So it actually measures 5 or 6 different shortcuts your brain might take and tells you where you score on them. And then gives you examples of how you may want to question things more or do this more or do whatever, so that you can counteract this natural way of being in the sense of starting to retrain yourself in a way that might be more advantageous to you achieving your money goals.
Now, wealth, of course, as you mentioned, is not just about numbers. It's many things, relationships, all the different things. Mindset, of course. How do you cultivate a wealth mindset in your clients?
Part of it is showing them what's possible. And also, let's figure out some KPIs, like key performance indicators, that we can actually understand and do it. I'm not talking about rates of return, because they're going to go up and they're going to go down and they're going to have good years and you're going to have bad years. But you know what might be a really good indicator is, how is your net worth performing? So for example, I was talking to a couple yesterday. He's a business owner and she is not. And just even going through the process, her stress and anxiety around money has really started to subside. However, what was interesting is I then reviewed their net worth statement and showed them how far they'd come in the time they've been working with me. And to show just how far they had come. And so if we know, let's go back to the beginning. Net worth is the amount of money and things you own. Your house, your RSPs and things like that, or Roth IRAs, whatever country you're listening in. And then you have what you owe, credit card debt, mortgages, etc. The difference between those is your net worth. Right. So depending on our strategy, are we attacking your debt? Are we attacking your savings, or a combination of the both? If you save more money, your net worth goes up. If you pay off debt, your net worth goes up. So that's how we look at those as our two levers, deciding which ones make most sense. But that's how we're going to measure your outcome. How well is your net worth moving?
And that's black and white. That's concrete proof.
It's perfect numbers, right?
Yeah.
So for example, I was with clients yesterday. Their net worth had increased by $300,000 in 2 years. However, she wasn't feeling good.
Wow.
Right? So by showing her, and she's, oh my gosh, I guess we are doing okay. It's just that nice indicator to go, you're worrying about stuff and maybe you don't have to as much.
Yeah, for sure. Financial literacy, of course, is another concern, hence the work you do, and you will always be employed. How do you contribute to financial literacy in initiatives, and what steps can individuals take to enhance their financial knowledge and decision-making capabilities?
I think it's actually choosing a really good team can be helpful, because there's all kinds of resources. Being aware that some of them might be slanted towards one particular product or service more than the other. But with a good team, a good financial planner, what they're doing is giving context to everything. And also, I've learned this as well, is I go into every meeting assuming that you're at zero. And that way I treat everybody, okay, do you know what that is? Okay, no. Okay, here's what it is. Do you know what? Here, let me explain what that is. And you know, We sometimes, I think, by very nature of maybe what education you have, what title you have, people make assumptions about what you know.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that's, and then you run into this area of shame where you might feel like, oh, I can't let on that I don't know what that is because I should know. And so then they're in this place where, well, I don't know how to ask because whatever. So that's why I try and take all that out, create a completely judgment-free zone of, hey, let's just go in. I don't care what you know. Let's just figure out where you're at and help you get to the next level.
And that makes you good at what you do. Because you don't go in with this, well, you should know this and you should know that attitude. And there's no shame involved at all.
Absolutely. And another piece I want to add on to that, Brad, is that, you know, there's in particular studies with women have shown that we're actually very financially literate.
Yeah.
It's when we layer on the confidence level. So it's more about building the confidence muscle necessarily than maybe the pure literacy number. We know more than we think, but we're not necessarily confident in our actions. And so that's what we want to work on as well.
Thank you for pointing that out, Wendy. What would you say are three of the most important lessons you've learned in your financial career journey as a financial advisor?
Number one, it's a little bit like a young adult novel that was probably out when we were young. And it was by, I believe, S.E. Hinton. And it was, that was then, this is now. So what I actively encourage is when we get into our first meeting and shame, shoulds, all that stuff is sitting in your handbag or on the table. And part of me is, well, that was then. You didn't know. This is now. So if we can drop that baggage off in the past and move forward, we're going to be way more likely to be successful. So it's about recognizing, hey, you may have made mistakes. You can't change them by worrying.
No, exactly.
So if we can reduce some of that negative emotion around the whole process, and also you are way more capable than you think you are around money, but it could be from programming. Maybe you were told when you were young that you were bad at math, but you're not. But now that you think you are, that may manifest itself.
So it's more conditioning thing.
It's huge. It's huge. And so if I were to say those are some of the mistakes, and also compounding, just a little bit of savings starts to really add up. And it's amazing how, even if it's just $25 a week, $50 a week, how that adds up. And that really becomes a little bit of your carrot, and it's motivating. Oh, look how big that is. Oh, my next raise, I'm going to add in whatever my raise is, my net, I'm going to put another third of that on that payment. Right.
Yeah.
For saving.
As mentioned, you are an author. I would love to speak a little bit about your author journey. So please share a little bit about the book, the title, the subject matter, and what that experience was like for you actually writing your story and putting it out there for the world.
So yeah, the book that I have that's published or available print on demand on Amazon is called Burn Your Budget, How to Spend Your Way to Financial Freedom.
I love it.
You'll find is that in my personal lives, I'm a little bit anti-budget. I feel like anti-budget is a whole bunch of line items that we're kind of trying to do mental math on. We may be using tools like Mint or something like that, or we're looking at our credit card statements and they're giving these nice little reports now about where that money went. But so much of that is actually a result. It's already done. What we need to focus on is our predictive stuff. And that's where my one number solution came out. And that's why I wrote that book, was around, hey, let's talk about how can you spend differently? Mm-hmm. How can you take a bunch of categories and give yourself a lump amount and realize that every week, how much you put to groceries, how much to put to eating out, how much you put for whatever can vary. So instead of trying to say, I always spend this much on groceries, because I feel like soap is the anti-hero here, because all the soaps will run out on the same week. It's your laundry soap, it's your dish soap, it's your shampoos. And oh my goodness, that stuff is expensive. So you spend more.
And things like that.
Yeah, life is not a straight line affair.
No. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, but we're on the same page here, Brad, where we think that, you know, a budget is a straight line affair that you are tracking against and doesn't really allow for the variability of life. If I know that I really want to go to the fancy dancy restaurant on Friday night and I'm going to have a big old bill, well, maybe I'm going to decide I'm going to brown bag it all week, because that way I know I'm going to have enough cash for that. So it's more about behavior modification and living within an envelope for all of my life discretionary expenses, as opposed to, okay, I have this much for groceries, I have this much for my eating out, I have this much for my pet. I have the, you know what I mean? Like, it becomes, again, like I said, straight line, and I dislike it. And this way you can actually kind of work within it. And to be honest, Brad, life as being not a straight line affair. So we have an app that we developed specifically to help people with their one number that they can share with their significant other. But I'll give you a story about how we don't always want to stay even in that. And so this is going back now, but in 2019, I was in Toronto and my husband was coming up to join me. And he says, hey, Wendy, do you want to go to a Raptors game? And I've never been to a Raptors game. It was the playoffs. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, let's do it. And so he went and bought tickets. So they, we were immediately off plan, right? Because this was not in our one number. This was beyond our one number. However, I applied my three question test to it. One, is it worth it? Two, do I have to do it now? And three, am I doing it for the right reason? So when I look at all that, I'm like, yeah, we're going. So we actually saw the Raptors win the East. It was the most amazing, beautiful time, $17 beer aside, but it was so nice to be there, the atmosphere, so it was totally worth it. So I definitely crossed the line there, and then I made adjustments later because it was worth it. Yeah. And so that was just being able to say, have those conversations with yourself or with your significant other to decide, hey, we're about to go over the line and we're about to make a choice. I made that decision consciously and for the right reasons. And that right reason question came from when you're dealing with broken families for whatever reason or different things. If you're buying stuff for your kids from guilt, from whatever, that may not necessarily be the best reason. So that's why I introduced that question. So you can start surfacing, hey, am I buying this for the right reason? Do I need to?
For sure. And so how long did it take you to write the book?
Not that long. I actually employed a service. So it wasn't just me writing. It was one of those ones. Now, it was so fascinating is that you work with a service and then it came back and then I ended up basically rewriting it anyway. So... So it's hard to say, right? So yeah, it's a small book, but it's, I know that something people can consume. We know if you look at the statistics, the number of people who actually finish a 200 page book is so small.
Slim, for sure.
Yeah. So we wrote something that could be consumed in an hour and a half.
What do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
I love this question because I'm big into that, but I think I connect dots and people. So yeah, that's what I think I do.
Now, speaking of success, being a financial planner, I'd love to hear your definition of success.
Ooh, it's all variable for everybody, as you know, Brad. But for me, it is hitting my goals. For me, it is how many people whose lives I've changed as a result of that. When we look at my big audacious goal, it's like, how can I change a million lives, right? Through the work I do, the podcasting I do, the speaking I do, so that someone listening today hopefully will have that epiphany moment and things will not be the same for them. And that's what gives me a lot of juice.
What would you say is one of the most important things you've learned in your life? And what was your life like before you learned it? What was your life like after learning it?
I find this question incredibly hard because I think there's been a ton of mistakes along the way of building a business. You know, one of the biggest things I learned was get it in writing and to make sure. So in particular, when you're collaborating with someone, shareholders agreements, all those pieces need to be put in place. Things can go wrong. So you want to make sure that you, it's almost like in shareholders agreement, or it's a little bit like a prenup in the sense of let's negotiate our breakup before we even get together. So that's how I look at it. It does change things because it puts you more in control and you're less at the mercy of somebody making arbitrary decisions.
What was a turning point in your life and how did that turning point affect you?
I think the biggest turning point was I was listening to a Successory CD. Do you remember those, that magazine, Success Magazine? And
yes.
We used to get the CDs inside. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to that one time. And this guy, I think it was Jim Rohn, was talking about how you can compound or add and or multiply. And in compounding, it was basically about delegating, building team, but you're still the primary point person. And then when you look at multiply, it really is about increasing impact. So you're creating more of yous. So I truly believe that the work I do is life-changing. And so if I want to increase my impact, I have to show other people how to do that or build them up so that they can do that. And so that was really life-changing. And sometimes I curse that decision because sometimes it might be easier just to be yourself and a couple others and go versus making the definite decision that you're going to build big.
What is one of your biggest failures, or we'll call them life lessons or teachable moments, whatever term you want to use, and what did you learn from it?
I'll go back to that and get it in writing. So I was helping a friend out. She was going through divorce. And so, let's get this property. You're going to have to do it in your name, Wendy, because I'm in a divorce and blah, 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 blah. And next thing you know, all the verbal agreements we had or understandings were no longer being adhered to. Oh, and I had to sell the property at a loss. And it was just a very painful time frame because I lost money, but I also lost friendship over it too.
Yeah, right? For sure.
And so that was a big lesson learned because, again, agreements say friends as well.
And family.
Yes.
That shit can happen in family too. So you have to be very careful.
Well, and also, you know, sometimes I get in trouble because you say a word and I'll go, what does that mean to you? Because let's just make sure we are on the same page about what that word means as Absolutely. We're talking. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Wendy, what do you see as your greatest accomplishment thus far?
Thus far, that's a really hard question, but it might be the work I've done with the clients I've done and how I've been able to affect their lives, the people I've mentored along the way. And sometimes you don't even realize what a big deal you are to some people or how you've impacted them until it happened to me once. I'm sitting in an audience and someone goes, well, I really have to thank Wendy for encouraging me to do X, Y, and Z. And you're like, where did that come from? Oh, she's talking about me. But it's important for me. I'm in a couple of programs where people reach out. I have a conversation with them about what the finance industry is and or help them connect with people and things like that, because I think that's important to always be giving back if possible. And, you know, for some of my clients, there's the odd one that I'm like, I'm going to do this pro bono because of where you're at in your life. Yeah. And I know I can make a difference.
What does the word empowerment mean to you?
It means really having control, I think, at some level. And I know sometimes control gets a bad rap as a word, but empowerment is really about understanding what I'm capable of, having the confidence to do it, and knowing I can do it.
Okay, we're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here.
Oh, here we go.
Next grouping of questions, just be 2-3 forward answer.
Oh, gosh.
You're
okay.
All psyched up already.
42 and 7.
You got this. You got this. What is one of your favorite quotes?
Oh, success is never a big step taken later. It's a bunch of little steps starting now.
What is one thing you want but cannot buy with money?
More time off.
If you could teach the world one thing, what would it be?
That money's a good thing.
How would you describe it? It gets a bad rap.
It does.
It does. Money is the root of all evil. Oh. Money doesn't grow on trees. All these
it
things.
Should be heard.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Curious.
What is one thing you love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
Oh, I think it is my curiosity. The fact that I like to keep learning.
What is your favorite self-care practice?
I would have to say, I think now that I'm back at the gym, it's going to the gym again and getting strong. I love being strong.
And that concludes our rapid fire section. I've got a little surprise question for you.
Oof. Yay, bonus
question. I've been throwing these in. Yeah, bonus question. I've been throwing these in the last few interviews I've done. If you could take one feeling or one belief and bottle it and give it to people, what would it be?
Self-confidence.
Love that answer. What is one lesson that your career has taught you that you think everybody should learn at some point in their life?
That you are enough and can do it so that you don't need someone else always to help you or to be that person to give you the confidence if you know you can do it, and those people might actually end up holding you back instead of just doing it on your own.
If you could step into my shoes, what question would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
Why do I love celebrity gossip site Lainey Gossip so much?
Okay, go ahead. Why?
Why not? Okay, it's a weird thing, but I've been reading her for years, but she's taken gossip to a new level and she analyzes the PR and the strategic and the goals behind all of it as well, which is so interesting. So that why did we see that picture of so-and-so? Why, you know, anyway, I love that. It goes deep. It does. It's really interesting.
What challenge in your life would you say has shaped you the most?
I'm not going to say challenge, if it's okay. I'm going to talk about a person. I'm going to talk about my mother here. Mm-hmm. So my mother became legally blind when I was quite young. Mm-hmm. And it's stopped her from nothing. Oh, yeah. So she built a gazebo in her backyard. She took a motorcycle driving course and passed it.
What?
Come on. I'm not joking. She had more power tools than most men I know. She decided to do something. She just did it.
What the fuck?
Really like Yeah. So knowing that attitude and just to do stuff.
That is incredible resilience. Yep. How the fuck did she take a motorcycle test being blind?
Well, she took the course. Now, being blind doesn't mean she was completely blind. She had a little bit of peripheral vision. But yeah, the stories, I didn't go. My brother took it with her. And what was interesting, he said, was watching the instructor, because there was this one test where he would tell you to go one way or the other. So he's hugely gesturing because he wants her to know. And he's a little freaked out because she's coming at him. I'm going to tell him to go this way. But she was determined to be able to drive in her back 40 someday. So
that's incredible. I love it. What a story. Yeah. Your mother sounds incredibly resilient.
Very. Yeah. Wow. She even went back to school. So I can remember, I think I was 13 and reading the Chaucer Canterbury Tales out loud for her course she was on.
Yeah. Amazing. Sounds like an amazing woman. What is your why?
I think it goes deep down. It is to really help people. I really do enjoy getting off. That's that connecting with people. Oh, you need a help. Here's a resource. Oh, I can help you. Let me help you do that. So it's the really of the helping people and helping them get further down and reducing their stress and anxiety if possible. Yeah.
What is one thing you know now that you wish you knew when you started your entrepreneurial journey?
Everything takes longer than you expect it to. And when you do a 30, 60, 90 day plan and 90% of it's in 30 days, you're not going to get it done.
Yes, that everything takes longer than you think idea. I learned that long ago, even before entrepreneurial, because I learned that working in the audiovisual world, we'd set up shows and you'd think that it's going to take this amount of hours and no chance. It never gets done when you think it's going to. You have to add padding in there to accommodate for the extra time for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You can't go into a job thinking, okay, I'm starting at 8:00. I'm going to be out of here by noon. No, you're not going to happen. At least not in the AV world anyways. So I learned that lesson very early on.
It's a tough one.
Which I'm grateful for.
Yeah. Yeah. Giving yourself that padding and grace. As I joke, it only took me 17 years to figure out my products.
There you go. See, it's a journey. It's a long journey. The entrepreneurial journey is tough. It is not easy. You get pushed and stretched. And no, it is not. Absolutely not.
When I talk to people who are about to start a business, I tell them they're only going to be stressed 2 times.
Okay. What 2 times?
When they're busy and when they're not.
True. Very true. Wendy, if you had the opportunity to sit down and have a 1 hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
Oh gosh. I have that now. I've heard this question a couple times. And Christiane Amanpour. Oh my God. Okay. What a storyteller. And she has been on the front line of so much that's going on in the world and has such deep, almost knowledge of things, you know, just the people she's gotten to talk to and how she is able to frame up what's going on. I think she's just brilliant.
If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Just ask.
It's pretty simple.
Well, if you think about it, my husband calls it NFL, no fear of loss. Just ask.
Yeah, if you don't ask, you won't know. And if you don't ask, the answer will always be no.
Yes, exactly.
Lastly, Wendy, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your tribe, your people, your corner of the world, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of wisdom would you impart?
Oh my God, I should have planned for this one. I think that it all comes down to know yourself. Know that a lot of the limitations that you perceive may or may not be real. And that until you test those limitations and believe that you can go through them, you'll never find out for sure which way they are. And if you think about my mother and what the world said were her limitations and how she perceived her limitations, it's a not living example, but an example of you don't know your limits until you test them.
Beautifully said. Wendy, thank you so much for taking and making the time to be here with me today. I am so grateful to be connected to you and to have you as a member of the Empowerography community. This has been an absolute pleasure. So many laughs and so much wisdom. So thank you for sharing your story, your journey, and the beautiful light you put out into the world through the work you do. I appreciate you.
It was awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure and my honor. Once again, my name is Brad Walsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Wendy Brookhouse. She is a certified financial planner, the founder and chief strategist of Black Star Wealth, and an author. Wendy, thank you so much. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at viseuphoria.ca and follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.